There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 713. I'm performing in Florida this weekend, Friday and Saturday, Orlando and Tampa, and then the next weekend in Sacramento and San Jose. It's part of the Fun Comfortable Tour. April Richardson's on the road with me. Go to funcomfortabletour.com for tickets and info on that business. What you got on the Nerdist Community Corkboard?
I got two things that are Nerdist Podcast Network related. First, Dave Ross is taking Terrified on the road. He will be touring all over California at the end of this month and doing stand-up shows and live Terrified podcast recordings. You can find all his dates and info at DaveRoss.com and by clicking shows. Fantastic. And if you're in LA and have Friday afternoon free, that's this Friday, August 7th, come to a taping of Chewing It with Kevin and Steve. And that's Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy from Super Troopers, Beer Fest, and all those good movies at Improv Olympic at 1 p.m. They're going to be talking to George Wendt from Cheers.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm sure Matt's going to be so jealous.
Oh, my God.
And I think it's free. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it might be free. And if it's not free, it's going to be cheap as shit. So just come.
Thanks, bro.
I saw a little come. Please come.
Can you crack me up? This podcast is Ed Helms, number three. A three-peat of Ed Helms promoting Vacation, which is in theaters now. God damn it, I love Ed Helms.
Me too.
He's so fucking funny. He destroyed on At Midnight the
Did
other
he?
Night.
Oh, I haven't watched
which
it.
You should watch online if you can find it somewhere, because now I've spoiled it that he won. But you know what? It's still worth the journey. But he won in a way that no one has ever tried before in a For the Win.
I'm so intrigued.
You would just have to see it to understand what it was that he did.
I'm so intrigued now.
And I didn't, the first answer I read, and that leveled the place, and I thought, well, this one's going to win. And then I read the next one, and then it turned out to be Ed's, and then he won, and it was genius. So Vacation in theaters, and also, I wonder if he'll pop up on The Daily Show at some point, right?
Oh, I'm sure. It's
Can't
the last week.
The last Daily Show is on Thursday. I know. Tomorrow. Oh, my God. So anyway, Ed Helms.
And check out all his bluegrass music.
All the bluegrass music. It's some of my – we talk about it a little bit. I love bluegrass music.
Me
and,
too.
And I also love the Nerdist Podcast number 713 with Edward Helms. Katie, this roller thing would be cheap as shit.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
This again. What is this, like three times now? Jesus Christ. What's happening?
Are we live?
We're not technically live. We're recording.
Sure.
But no one's hearing it as we're doing it right now.
The
year is 1897.
It's Edward Helms and Christofferson Hardwicke.
I should change my name to sound more American.
At some point, I should drop the nine vowels at the end of my name. Just be Hardwick. I think 15 letters is too many to spell Hardwick. I'll tell you that much right now.
Well, you never get through Ellis Island.
Oh, I don't even know what that is anymore. Is that a new thing? Is that where they put that big bronze lady?
Can you name any presidents? Turn around, back to Slovakia with you.
Oh, I can name them. They might not be their names, but I can give them names. Pet names. Here's McKinley.
Sideburns, Hamilton.
Cheeks, Taft.
Guys, we have a band. Our drummer is cheeks tacked.
What are we waiting for?
Our trumpet player, all of our horn section are dead presidents. Matter of fact, the Dead Presidents, an actual band, is our. Isn't that a band? No, the Dead Kennedys. Dead Kennedys, forgive me.
The Dead Kennedys. Right. The Dead Presidents was...
What is that? Oh, that's a movie.
The Dead Presidents... Well, Dead Presidents was a movie. The Dead Presidents was also the gang in Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze, Point Break.
My Own Private Idaho.
It was My Own Private Idaho. River Phoenix played... Andrew Jackson in My Own Private Idaho, where Andrew Jackson was trying to establish his own country called Idaho.
Yeah, exactly.
He just wanted to hang out there. And
I get those movies confused all the time.
Yeah, My Own Private Idaho
and Twin
Point
Falls,
Break.
Idaho.
Oh, okay.
And Point Break.
A lot of words get jumbled in my head. I often get River Phoenix confused with the Nile River.
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
Yep, ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm. But Ed, you're here to talk about why I was up until 2 in the morning on Ancestry.com. No, you're here to promote your movie. I was up until 2 in the morning on Ancestry.com.
Doing for personal reasons?
Yes, I just, you know,
it's a rabbit hole.
My dad's not alive anymore, and so I realized his birthday was Saturday, and I realized I don't really know that much about my so I just casually went on to Ancestry. I'll do the trial for 14 days.
Sure.
Immediately sucked in, and for 5 hours last night, just building. It's amazing.
You have lots of Nazi.
No
ancestors,
not no,
and
no,
slave owners, no, and
they were Nazi slave owners.
They were Nazi.
Wait a minute. What if they owned Nazis as slaves? And that would be okay.
That
right?
would actually be cool. That would actually be a badge of honor. That's a rabbit hole. I'm kind of a mutt, and when people ask what's your heritage, I don't really know. And I've gone on Ancestry.com and made a few connections, but none more than someone forwarded me a blog that's like a celebrity ancestry blog. And I don't know if it's true, but this person had connected me way like centuries back to like British and German dignitaries and –
I can see that. It's weird when you're a white person and there are so many different things that you can pour into that vat.
Yeah.
Did you were you able to verify any of this?
Of course not. No, I have no – I don't know. I don't really know. Both my mom and my dad's side have been in the Americas for hundreds of years. So it's a little hard to tell like back before that.
Are you related to the Helms Bakery at all?
Not that I know of, but definitely.
Right.
I mean,
at some point there has to be.
Yeah.
It all sort of weaves. I found out my great-grandfather was a man named Rufus. When he was my age, he was in jail for grand larceny. And he went by the name Buzz Hardwick, which is the fucking greatest name I've ever heard.
I just changed your name to that, Buzz.
I notarized that.
Yeah.
I became a notary just to allow that to happen. So from now on.
Buzz Hardwick.
Buzz Hardwick.
That's you sound like either a quarterback or...
or a daredevil villain.
Yeah.
One of those two.
Or like Tom Cruise's rival in Top Gun.
It was
between Iceman and Buzz Hardwick.
Buzz Hardwick. Buzz Hardwick.
Hey, what's up, Maverick? What are you guys? What are we flying these things? I'm not real good.
I'm gonna fly mine faster than yours.
So
how do you compete with a pilot on your own aircraft carrier? Like what are you? You're just like competing to be cooler. I mean, there's no finish line. You're not racing planes, are you?
Yeah, we're racing planes for freedom.
Right. Racing. Who can get to the Russian MiG faster?
So they can have sex with Kelly McGillis.
Ah, there you go.
Because that was what was going on.
To the dulcet tones of Berlin.
Yes!
Yes.
Oh, I love that song.
That took my breath away.
So good. And a young Meg Ryan taught us how to laugh. I don't know if that's true. I mean, but she was.
Oh, that's right. She's Goose's wife. Oh, yeah. That was. She was great in that. So when Goose dies, spoiler alert.
Oh man! God damn it! I'm not a waterproof.
I'm sorry.
I knew everything else about the movie but that.
Jeez.
I went to the bathroom just during that scene. I thought they got divorced.
Yeah.
Like I thought,
no.
You know. Maverick comes in to hug her. I was like, oh, it didn't work out. He's, you know, he went AWOL.
No. Goose dies.
So he went AWOL from life.
He blows himself up by accident. It's a
in a firework. He holds a firework on his head.
Yeah.
And
what is it? He tries to eject.
Tries to eject, and he gets
crushed by the
spoiler.
By the canopy.
I knew the spoiler. Yeah, see, his head hits the thing, and
right.
then
and there's a whole investigation.
Yeah.
Tom Skerritt's like very pissed.
He's upset, but you know the important thing is just the less attractive of the two people died.
Right.
Tom Cruise survived because he had a better jawline, and I think that's the most important.
Yeah,
I think that's the most important thing to remember.
Well, is it. I mean, and it makes sense that a goose dies hitting a windshield. Is that not? No. Did I not?
Escape for so many.
I just realized that. I got
that's
him. I got Hardwick. I got him.
Oh, that's the fucking best. Oh, my God. It is. You know. And it's only in this context where you could come out with something like you can't just walk with people in conversation. Hey, remember Top Gun? Remember when Goose did the thing? Goose in a windshield? Like we needed that much runway, so to speak.
Yeah,
we needed more than an aircraft carrier's worth of runway to get to the goose joke.
No,
which is,
it never would have emerged.
That's a joke of
from
that's
my
a joke
psyche.
Of the week, Ed.
Thanks.
I mean, even if you can't go around and tell everyone, you have to know. You need to feel good about that.
Yeah, and you're right. I can't bring it up later and be like, remember when...
Listen to this podcast, 9:30 to 10:42, and then you're welcome.
Oh, boy. All started with Buzz Hardwick.
Everything started with Buzz Hardwick.
It did.
He might be...
The first Nerdist.
Was it? I don't know. He was a fucking hillbilly.
Yeah, he was a grand larcenist.
He was a grand larcenist.
He had a podcast.
Here's what
called
I know:
the Grand Larcenist,
which he stole from someone else. First of all, in looking at the ancestry stuff, it's fascinating because so many people, just because of mortality rates, and I guess because of lack of birth control, and let's be honest, unprotected sex is pretty rad. Tons of kids. They just had all of them.
Yeah.
All of my ancestors, like 5, 6, 7 kids, and then there's always a couple that didn't really make it. You know, like they may have lived from 3 to 16 and then were claimed by nature because the world was a hostile place back then.
Yeah. If infant mortality, it was crazy. You look back in over the centuries, and it's come well, like now it's surprising when an infant dies, but it was
back
it
then
was
it was just funny. Oh, I thought you were gonna say it was comical. Back then it was comical. You were saying commonplace, and I anticipated the wrong direction. It was comical.
Well, it is to you, and that's a that's a sad thing.
No,
that's a dark thing about you.
No. Listen, they would have died by now anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's far enough in the past. That it's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, what was there? There's if you ever read Mark Twain's autobiography, there's this weirdly poignant section where he takes his I believe it's an infant daughter for a carriage ride, and he doesn't notice that her blanket falls off, and it's very cold out, and they get home, and the infant gets very sick and ultimately dies, and he talks about this in his autobiography, which was published posthumously, and I don't think he had told anyone in his family that at the time.
So he, by today's standards, would have been absolutely arrested.
Yes, but I mean, it was also something that he took to his grave with great grief. I mean, parents, you know, make tragic mistakes And I don't know that. I don't know. Is that criminal negligence? I would. I have no idea.
I mean, but now I think it would be because we are. You know, we. I mean, it's. I think
we
it's like
punish this, everyone for
it's,
everything.
It's the, it's the opposite of leaving a child in a hot car. Like you've left a child out.
You're right.
In the cold.
Yeah.
Although he was with the. I don't know.
It's horrible. It's and horrible. Then, but it's actually it's heartbreaking to read because it's something that has tortured him.
Until the end, when this really magical jumping frog comes in and saves.
From Calaveras County.
Yes, the frog reaches into the afterlife and pulls her soul back to the child.
Oh, boy.
But the child is actually just a frog at that point.
And his mouth is filled with buckshot.
Yep. That's
right?
A buckshot's a thing everyone had back then.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I didn't know that about Twain.
I think
that's
unless I'm, like, conflating biographies. I think that's in his autobiography, which is one of the greatest reads ever.
If you're remembering it correctly.
Yes. Yes. I remembered.
It's either the best or the worst thing I've ever read.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
And Ne'er the Twain Shall Meet?
Yeah, it's an oddly vulnerable, poignant thing from such a great, like, master of irony. You don't hear kind of authenticity that
well a lot of comedy
much.
People the tragedy waters run deep.
Oh boy.
You know, I mean, that's
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I don't know, you seem nervous. Beads of sweat forming on your forehead.
These aren't tears or sweating. There's
sweating
no tragedy in my life.
Sweating are basically face tears.
No, laughter water,
nothing but
that's what that is. I have runny eyes.
Oh no, well, that sounds like a terrible medical condition.
No, it's delightful.
No, listen. Yeah, it's after Goose's death, Meg Ryan's character becomes a stand-up comic. That's what they don't show you in the follow-up movie. I always wish they would do, like, I wish they would hop genres in sequels where they could just, like, take a character from one movie and then just completely make it, like, a madcap comedy or a horror movie or just, like, some other.
That is a cool idea. Or to take, just to toss people into weird known characters into weird genres.
Because, like, Vacation is now a full-blown slasher horror thriller, right?
That's
what you guys
do. But that's what it's always been.
Right.
So we're not doing anything new there. Yeah, I don't know. Could you do that? Could you stick?
I think the problem is that no one would be willing to risk the money to do that.
Here's the thing. I mean, if you go back, if you follow, say, Batman back to sort of like Adam West, give a very different Batman than Christian Bale.
True, but no, not,
so that's a
but
very
not
different
really
experience.
Like a sequel. You know, the closest thing that I've ever seen to it is Rob Zombie made House of a Thousand Corpses, which I was in, and then he made The Devil's Rejects, and Corpses was a horror movie, and Devil's Rejects was like a grindhouse movie. Like he did evolve, like he did switch genres, sort of, but they were related enough. But I mean, like taking a
those genres to me are like the difference between cheddar and sharp cheddar.
Yeah,
like I don't know, I can't. What is the horror versus grindhouse?
Like a grindhouse movie. But didn't Woody Allen try to do that in Melinda Melinda? Wasn't that like one storyline is a comedy and the other storyline is a serious story about this character?
Oh.
It was not a great movie.
Don't know.
All right.
I don't know that.
Well, your homework.
Okay.
Is to do that.
Done.
I'd like a five-page double-space report on my desk by 9 a.m.
You got it. Vacation is a slasher horror. we're real psyched.
I remember you were talking about this the last time. You were talking about Vacation the last time you were here, but I don't think you guys had started yet. You were just sort of in the initial phases of it, I believe. And and I know that it's tricky with a hallowed property like Vacation, but the clips that I've seen look fucking hilarious.
Oh,
I mean, like
thank you.
The billboard, the sewage billboard, is fantastic, and then the nod to the Christy Brinkley thing.
Oh yeah,
really funny.
Yeah. That sewage thing is very polarizing. Like I feel like there are people like me who are extremely juvenile and think that nothing is funnier than like a person getting poo on them by accident.
The look on the kid's face in the background with that wah. This is fucking great.
Look, I found a dart and it's a hypodermic needle. I mean, that's That is some, that's some good stuff right there.
So you all have hep everything.
Yeah.
By the time
Yeah, but that and other people.
Heps A through F.
there are so many more heps than we realized. But yeah, that's actually one of the nice things about these Griswold comedies is that there are no consequences
at all
for each set piece.
Like, no,
each crazy thing that happens, we're just on to the next.
Yeah, and they've already they set up the rules for that universe, which is. The kids can change in any movie without any explanation. Kids can be different, and timelines of the kids' ages can vary wildly.
Sure,
and it's totally fine.
Why not?
But you are
Rusty. Has changed every movie thus far.
He has.
If there is another,
so is Audrey. Rusty and Audrey both changed.
No, Audrey was the same in the first one and European Vacation.
Oh, she was the same in European. Was she the same in European Vacation?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Jason Lively was in
European Vacation.
Rusty.
Blake Lively's older brother.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yes, Blake, the Livelys. I know this because Jason and Blake's father, Ernie, was the only acting coach I've ever had.
Whoa.
And so
cool.
I think he was Jason's stepfather. It was Jason and then Robin Lively, who was in Teen Witch. They were a brother siblings.
Okay.
And then their mom married this man, Ernie, who then gave birth to Blake and another son.
Well, this is some serious Hollywood scuttlebutt through here.
You know, in the Ancestry.com vein.
Yeah, right. Let's make connections.
I don't think Audrey was the same in European Vacation and the first Vacation. I think the Audrey in European Vacation was, I can't remember her name, but she was more of a, she did more comedies in the 80s. And can you look that up, yeah. Katie? And if I'm wrong, then you can punch Kyle in the, Dana Hill was, yes. Woo. But she wasn't in the first Vacation. The first Vacation, I think, was a different girl. And if I'm wrong, then you can punch Kyle in the dick. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Kyle. That's kind of what you get.
Dana
Barron, totally different. They're both Danas. I'll give you that.
All right, I'm embarrassed. Egg on my face.
That's okay. The laughter water will wash it away.
It washes it off.
I mean, I only remember that because I saw both movies so many times, and I know people. When people talk about the vacations, Christmas Vacation seems to be one that they talk about a lot.
Yeah, that's a favorite for a lot of people.
I still think the first one.
The original to me. Because it create the universe. It set all the rules. It set the characters were kind of it's just where they took shape. It's where they were molded. And there's something really satisfying about that. And I think it's one of Chevy Chase's greatest performances ever.
Yeah.
And he's great in all of them, and he's great in every movie, but that first one, it's so effortless. There's something really really beautiful about it.
Vegas Vacation, I think I saw the least of the series. But Christmas Vacation is fun. I just feel like by the time they got to Christmas Vacation, it was already sort of like, we know who these characters are. Now it's kind of madcappy.
Yeah.
They all Randy Quaid's character is an extreme version of Cousin Eddie.
Right.
And, you know,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Amazing.
Very angry neighbor.
Very upset.
Yep.
But she gets her comeuppance.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
In the end. And then, did that squirrel ever work again? Or was that the only movie?
He did some of the voices for Alvin and Alvin and the Chipmunks. But
I see, because they can't get a chipmunk to do a chipmunk voice.
Nope, they got to go squirrel.
This is the kind of racism I'm talking about in this business. The squirrels doing chipmunk voices is fucking bullshit. I get it. They all look the same because they're ground mammals.
Chris, what? Relax. He was the voice of a squirrel character.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Right.
My social justice outrage was at a
misplaced.
Fever pitch.
Misplaced.
I apologize. I should have let you finish. that he played the squirrel that gets cut out, the Stu Sutcliffe of the Alvin and the Chipmunks. It was the fourth chipmunk was actually a squirrel.
Oh God,
that's why they cut him out.
Where are we?
Come on every week.
It's so fun. The Ancestry.com thing was such a perfect launch because I feel like we're just going down rabbit holes of like every connection. It's delightful.
I mean, I will say we're coming with a lot of historically accurate, indisputable facts about things and presidents
and some serious mistakes. yes,
from movie franchises that we're in,
that we're parts of.
I mean, us.
Sure. Well, I think some of your Rob Zombie data was flawed. But
I don't think so.
No, I'm trying to drag you under the bus with me.
There's no room. Plenty of room under this bus. Plenty of room under this old bus.
Oh, God.
Were you a Bonnaroo? You were a Bonnaroo this year.
Yes, yes.
Oh, man.
And you were too. And
I was.
We tried to connect, in
fact. We were going to try to get you and the band to come and do a bluegrass song, and then it just during my set, but it just the timing was weird.
I got in late, and I had to rehearse with Mumford and Sons.
I've heard of them
because I hopped up on stage with them that night.
Oh, come on!
Yeah, which was pretty.
Did you do some banjo picking?
I did. I played some banjo, and I think I changed music forever. I think that's a.
I'm going to agree with you.
Safe assumption.
I think Mumford and Sons really is the soundtrack to Buzz Hardwick. Just that old timey
driving. Yes,
living raw.
Yeah,
in
very
the old...
very heartfelt, emotional.
Yeah,
kind of vaguely chimney sweep.
So did you rehearse? Did you rehearse with Mumford and Sons, or did you just come on and go? Oh, I can follow along.
No, I did. I went backstage a couple hours before their set, and they had this beautiful rehearsal space right backstage, and we just ran through the song.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you want to grab the mic at any point and just take over? Or?
What I really wanted to do was crowd surf.
With a banjo?
Yeah, with the banjo.
Has anyone crowd surfed with a banjo? You could.
I'm sure people have. I bet. Yeah.
All those kids on drugs, I'm sure, would be a great canopy to...
Well, I'd never seen anything like it. I've never been on stage in a situation like that. Mumford & Sons, they're massive international megastars. At Bonnaroo, they had 80,000 people.
Jesus
Just
Christ.
A sea of humanity. And they kick on these huge floodlights above the proscenium, and it lights up,
oh
just for hundreds of yards back, and it's endless. And I wanted to actually stand on my banjo and try to surf upright. I thought that'd be cool.
Oh, right? That'd be amazing.
Right? How cool would that be?
That would be so awesome. you should have next time. Next time you perform for 80,000 people.
I always thought that would be a cool set piece in a movie for somebody to like if there's a big crowd and someone has to get all the way across the other side of it and they like rip a door off of a hinge and put it on top of everyone.
Make it a surfboard.
And they stand up and the whole crowd like pushes them forward.
I think that's a great idea.
Even better if it's in a stadium and the stadium crowd is doing the wave.
Oh, but then, so they're surfing the wave
yeah.
as if it's an actual wave.
How cool would that be?
That would be pretty amazing.
Okay, I'm putting that in a movie.
And then...
Vacation 2.
What?
2 hours of Rusty Griswold just
on a rusty
crowd
door.
Surfing on a door.
And then someone in a shark outfit like jumps out of the
yes.
crowd and tries to...
And it's Chevy Chase
and it's
as
Chevy
the land
Chase
shark.
As the land shark!
Yes!
We did it!
Nice!
This is... I mean, I guarantee you movies have been sold with less. I mean, you can't tell me that movies haven't been sold with less. You can't tell me that, like, Police Academy 5 had more of a pitch than that.
Yep.
So I think this has to be a thing that happens.
Financiers, here's my email.
Send us your PayPal. PayPal is the
anyone who is a financier / Nerdist fan.
Yep.
And listening to this, just mail me cash.
Hey, that's Murray.
It's just like one guy. Spend it wisely.
It's just one guy. That's I was in the comedy tent. There were probably like 79,000 people at my show. I think it was probably like 79,000.
Comedy tent is that's the best venue at Bonnaroo because it's air conditioned.
Oh my god, it's so. I mean, Bonnaroo was amazing. I absolutely loved Bonnaroo, but it was really hot, and it's hard not to imagine. You know, they set up all these little villages, basically these tent villages.
Yeah. It's like a refugee camp. I like
people
riding
all night.
I don't know how they do it. It's punishing.
And then the sun just basically is just basically like a popcorn tin.
Yeah.
Just cooking them beginning at 7 o'clock in the morning when the sun is beaming in. I don't know how they
I mean, I am so grateful they're there, but I if I had a chance, I would say to them, go home and drink water and
drink plenty
sit
of water
by your air conditioner.
But people, I think that's just because we're not 20 anymore. I guess when you're 20, if none of that stuff matters. You just sort of shrug that stuff off.
You don't need hydration in your 20s.
No, you're fine.
Or sunblock.
Right.
Or evidently clothing. But you do need a lot of hallucinogens. And I'm just going off of what I saw there.
Exactly. You do need clothing if you're riding around in a carriage with Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Then if you don't, then you're going to die. But otherwise, you need... no clothing.
What was I going to say?
You were going to talk about how Mumford and Sons is now. You're going to start touring with Mumford and Sons.
Yes, I'm replacing Mumford and Sons as Mumford, and I am now the
I will no longer be at Helms.
It's just me and a banjo for 80,000 people over the world.
You're just going to take the name Mumford & Sons without the band or any of their songs.
No, they asked me to just take over their tour. And so I'm subbing in. I'm basically subbing for them.
I'm sure people will be very delighted when they go see Mumford & Sons. I just walk out and go, that's me now.
I read from Mark Twain's autobiography. I read the sad parts. And then I just, I kind of make up songs on the banjo.
We're drifting into an old Steve Martin bit, which is like you just can't say a sad thing when you're playing the banjo. You just can't have a sad moment when you're playing the banjo. Like, hey Steve, your house is burning down. Doesn't matter though. have you been playing with Steve at all lately?
I haven't lately, but we've had we have had a number of delightful picking sessions over the years.
Nice.
Yeah, he's just awesome. That's all there is to say.
What happens in a picking session? Because I've heard of these legendary picking sessions with people like yourself and Steve Martin and Kevin Nealon and people who are like groups of comedy people who will get together. Is it like a drum circle?
Yeah.
Where does everyone just sort of find a rhythm and then you figure out what your thing is and play all together, or do you show each other?
Everyone sits there and just wails on their banjos in their own world, and it's a cacophonous mess. It's usually that the wonderful thing about bluegrass music is that it's a lot like jazz in that everyone knows a lot of the same repertoire, and you can kind of just sit down and start playing and, hey, do you know this song? Or, yeah, do you know this one? And the other thing, unlike jazz, is that a lot of bluegrass songs are quite simple. They're 3 or 4 chords.
Right.
And it's usually a fairly straightforward chord progression, so you can pick it up pretty quickly. So that's been the nature of some of the hang sessions where we just, you know, songs will come up, and there are any number of musicians sitting around, and people just start playing.
It is one of my favorite forms of music because I feel like you can turn almost any song into a bluegrass song because it was designed to play without any amplification,
and yes.
So you have the basic constituents of voicing. With each of the handful of instruments that you might have, and there are arguments to what constitutes an actual bluegrass ensemble. And
sure,
and
sure.
I know that
yeah.
like some people pull in different instruments.
And yeah.
Some purists are like, well, that's technically not bluegrass.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, with a banjo and like a good stand-up bass and a little bit of percussion and like with these basic voices, you can construct about pretty much anything.
There's something about acoustic music just in general that is so intoxicating to me. I love the organic kind of analog feel of it. It's just the sound waves, a string vibrating, and it vibrates the air and it moves through the air and it hits your eardrum, and it's so natural. And you can carry a guitar with you anywhere or any acoustic instrument and just share music with people. It's really, acoustic music is a beautiful thing.
And bluegrass, I feel like, mixes itself. So when you're playing
right,
all
right.
those instruments together, they're yeah. all at specific voicings where it
right.
they all work very well together.
It's sort of up to the musicians to kind of mix themselves.
Right.
Because banjos are obnoxiously loud instruments by themselves. So if someone else is, like if a mandolin or a guitar is going to take a solo, or you really have to kind of back off the banjo. But that's part of that's what you learn as you play and go to jam sessions. And it's a really great dynamic. It's kind of this language that everybody speaks at a bluegrass jam session. And it's pretty special.
Do you guys were touring a bit, weren't you? This wasn't just...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was talking about our album the last time I was here, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So we... or I think we had just recorded or something. I don't remember. But yeah, so my trio, the Lonesome Trio, just put an album out last month, and we did a little tour. And that's actually... Bonnaroo was our second to last stop.
Oh, wow.
So I happened to jump up with Mumford & Sons, which was just a fun thing. And I know them from... we had done this comedy video for one of their songs mm-hmm. with Jason Sudeikis and Bateman and Will Forte a year or so ago. So anyway, that was just a fun random thing. But the Lonesome Trio played as part of the Bluegrass Situation Super Jam, which was the next day at one of the other tents, one of the other stages.
Oh, that's awesome.
And super fun. And I was hoping you could stay and come up and do a song with us.
I wanted to so bad, but I had to get back and go to work.
Yeah.
No.
Well.
Sounds very,
you know,
judgy.
I feel judged.
Well.
Yes, because we're overdue to have you back on stage.
I would love to.
It's the best.
I would love
it's
to.
It's so fun.
That was so much fun.
You're a damn good like metal singer.
I'm okay.
Do people
I'm
know this?
Screamy. They yeah. know because I do it to their ad nauseum on the podcast all
yeah.
the time. I'll just break out a little something.
Yeah.
And then to the extent where occasionally people will be like, do you have to sing every
I'm the same way. I sing way too much. Andy Bernard on The Office sang too much. Rusty in this movie arguably sings too much. On The Daily Show, I sang too much. I happen to think singing is awesome.
It is.
And especially if it's at a really inappropriate time.
Yes, and you know, listen, it's difficult. Well, although you are in a bluegrass band, so you can record an album and sing songs, you know, but I feel a little imprisoned by the comedy thing, which is that if I wanted to release like a regular album, I'd be like, what are you doing? Like contextually it'd be very weird.
Yeah.
I could do comedy. I could like Mike Furman and I did comedy songs, but it's not like I could just be like, here's my album Metal Dreams, you
yeah.
know, or whatever. And
I would buy that. But I think it's cool. Like I was initially like I've been playing with the Lonesome Trio. They're my two best friends in the world, and we've been playing for 20 years since college.
Wow!
And so and we've been writing songs forever. And I was actually like you said, I was kind of self-conscious because we're not a comedy band. Like we don't play comedy songs. Our songs are some of them are sort of a little sly or clever, but there's no. They're not joke songs.
Well, then when people show up, are they expecting like, oh, my God, is there going to be some weird turn at the end because Ed's funny?
Well, I don't I don't think so at this point, but it's also just is what it is. I mean, people show up with – everyone shows up with whatever expectations they may have. And we just do our thing, which is pretty sincere music.
Yeah.
And some of it's kind of like poignant or even maudlin. So it's – but it's just I did wonder at first – you know, when we first sort of talked about, well, we've been playing forever for our friends and families and for, you know, weddings of friends and whatever. But we want to put an album out there. Are people going to take this seriously? And I eventually just realized, like, who cares? Like, it is what it is. Yeah. It's a creative thing. I'm insanely proud of.
You don't have to listen to it if you think it's weird.
Yeah. And I just – I'm excited to share it and people will – listen and hopefully like it, and if not, all good.
I don't think
it's not for everybody.
You probably shouldn't open with your Mark Twain song "Frozen Carrots." It's a really sad.
Oh God!
How did he hide a daughter from everyone? Like, how does that?
What do you mean?
Well, you said that he wasn't until he took that story to his grave.
Well,
right?
His wife and family didn't know that that the blanket had fallen off.
They just thought it was a random
that she got sick, like lots of infants did in that time.
Sure.
So he basically went for this carriage ride, and it was very cold, and he didn't notice for you know like 45 minutes or whatever.
Right.
Totally making up that number.
Yeah. That's okay. You might totally be making up the story too.
long enough to compromise the infant's health.
Sure.
And when he got home, he didn't tell anyone that.
He didn't tell anyone. It was just like, crazy world we live in, huh?
Yeah.
Kids die all the time.
Right. It's old timey times.
Well, let's turn off the candles and
there was a lot of loosening of the string tie. Not sure what happened here.
I look like Colonel Sanders, whoever that is.
Whoever that might become. Whatever corporate shilling vehicle that might be down the road.
They did cast a new colonel.
I know.
It's sort of strange.
Oh, and he's a voice on Waze. It's Daryl Hammond. It's the great Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond is the...
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I think I read that. Or unless I'm just – I like to come on your show and just make shit up. There's nothing true.
Nothing true at all. The Twain thing never happened.
But this is – when we were driving around Manchester, Tennessee, trying to get to Bonnaroo, we had the Waze app up and we selected the Colonel Sanders voice.
That's
and it was delightful.
It is Daryl Hammond. That is fucking great.
Yes.
I had no idea.
Which leads me to another delightful thing that I will share with you.
Please.
Rusty Griswold is a voice on Waze right now.
That you can do that now?
Yes.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, you can get Rusty Griswold on there.
So Rusty went into a sound studio and had to go like, turn left, traffic ahead.
Exactly. They give you a script of like 60 phrases.
Oh, shit, cop.
Yeah. turn, stop, and drop off your kid at school.
That's
one. No, but they give you all these things
sure
to say.
Make sure it has a blanket.
And if you're in a convertible and it's winter, make sure your infants have blankets.
I mean, look, this happened so long ago that
right.
It's okay to talk about
it. It's dark. This is a bleak angle that we've gone on.
I was just going to bring up to see if I could pull up the Rusty Griswold voice on my Waze. How do you...
It's a little redundant since I'm sitting here, but...
Yeah, but this is really great. Here it is, Rusty Griswold!
Yeah!
Oh, my God. You could totally... Oh, my... I can't wait to listen to this. Ed, could you stop talking? I want to listen to Rusty Griswold. I think I've said it. Okay, great. All right, so let's go somewhere.
Let's do it.
Where do you want to go?
Let's go to Chris Hardwick's home address.
Let's go to Disney's Grand California. It's the closest thing we have to the Wally World.
Griswolds are out of here.
Hey, it's going to take 53 minutes to get there. All right. Do not send that ETA to my girlfriend because she'll wonder why I'm going to Disneyland in the middle of a work day without her. Why aren't you talking right now?
Did you hit start?
I did.
I'm resting. I'm tired.
God damn it. You promised that you were going to talk to me. Why aren't you talking to me, Rusty Griswold?
Well, start walking. Go somewhere. Turn left.
I'm not. I'm just trying to march in the place.
Get in your car.
It's got to follow the GPS. Here, you got to. I guess you'll have to do it live.
In 1.2 miles, turn right. You got the Alf puppet.
I got the Alf puppet.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, Rusty, where's the cat shelter?
I know.
That's a pretty good Alf.
That's not a
bad Alf.
Does
he talk?
No.
Oh, I thought you were going to like have a conversation between Rusty and the Alf puppet.
This is where the show gets to its down its weirdest trench is when an Alf puppet starts talking to Rusty Griswold on the Waze app. Yeah. Anyway,
So they give you a script of all these things to say, and then the Waze algorithm just kind of puts them in order as you drive.
That's fantastic.
And I've been listening to it in my car, and it's weirdly soothing. Does that make me a narcissist? I don't know.
If you're masturbating. Well,
I'm not. I'm not masturbating.
I don't mean now. I mean like back then. Clearly, you are right now.
Clearly,
you should probably stop.
Yes, I started when my voice came on.
What am I supposed to not jerk off?
Right. What? Yeah, it's fun. I like it. It's awkward though because the one thing that's odd about Waze to me is that sometimes you get to your destination and you get out of your car and you walk inside and it doesn't know quite yet where you are, so it'll keep giving you directions.
Trying to redirect you.
So like the other day I walked into a meeting and it was my voice saying back up and turn right or something. And everyone was like, what did you say?
I didn't say anything. Turn it around.
Griswold's on the way to Wally World.
Oh my God, this guy's crazy. He's like, he thinks
Ed,
he's his own
what
characters.
Are you talking about?
He thinks is he method? I don't understand.
And then I had to take my phone out and be like, it's just Waze, and yes, I did select my voice.
Oh. We're going to have to reschedule.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
This was supposed to be a...
Your pitch of Rusty Griswold surfing on a stadium has been declined.
What? I didn't even really get that. I brought a door?
We heard the voice on the Waze, and we just didn't like it. We didn't like it.
God damn it. Why do I spend my time building dioramas? I have a garage of failed dioramas. Rusty Griswold's Diorama Garage.
Yep.
Where Rusty Griswold...
That's the third sequel that's actually a Wes Anderson movie. It's all stop motion.
Soundtrack by Bell and Sebastian.
Yep.
If I would make a diorama, I'd make it with you.
Anything?
And I would follow the Griswolds herky-jerkily through the countryside.
By the way, Christine Applegate, amazing.
So great.
I mean,
as a person or as in this movie?
Which are you know, I did a couple Married with Children's in the 1900s, and she was super cool back then. I don't know. Did she ask about me on the set?
She did constantly.
Okay, cool.
I don't know why she asked me about you, but she knows we're friends. And she wants to know how you're doing and why.
You tell her I'm fine.
Why you were so rude. And like
I used to drink a lot.
Hitting on her excessively.
I used to drink a
How
lot.
How old were you at that time?
I was, I don't know, 20, I was 20s, 25 or something.
Okay.
It was like 1996,
Did
I think.
You do scenes with her? Were you
I
like,
did.
Or was
As a matter of fact, the weird coincidence is someone just, it just aired today and someone sent me a screenshot of it. And so I favorited it. So I'm going to show you. Here it is. There it is. This just happened today.
No way!
Yes, I played a VJ, Big Stretch, and it was
Look
like
at
the,
your hair.
They went to spring break. It was the Bundys went to spring break. Todd Glass was also in that episode.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you. I didn't know you had such a colorful history as an actor.
This is actor is a very generous term.
Well, but you had Mr. Lively clearly coached you very well in your VJ performance there.
There it is.
I'm buying it. I think it looks great.
Yeah, I had this helmet of 90s hair.
Mm-hmm.
And there she is.
Christina is the greatest. She's just the greatest. Like the best coworker you could ever hope for. So professional, super down to earth and hysterical, and as an actor, effortless. There's some, it's infuriating. Like, she just is so naturally good.
I mean, I remember when Married with Children and The Simpsons were like the two shows that established Fox as a network. When Fox basically was the internet of network television at the time.
Right? Yeah.
We're going to make super weird, edgy programming that none of the other networks could possibly compete
with. You're totally right. And I remember at the time, it's like, what? There's another network?
Yeah.
That's impossible.
A fourth?
You can't.
It's the big three. The big four.
You can't possibly add a network. And now it's like every week there's a new, like, Bibbledy Boo streaming channel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Bibbledy Boo.
Yep.
Which is the Bedknobs and Broomsticks streaming channel. Well, that was a weird pull.
Is that true?
Well, I think that was a lot of the... Yeah.
Is Bibbledy Boo a thing?
No, actually, I think Bibbledy Bobbledy Boo was in...
Bibbledy Bobbledy
Boo. Cinderella? I think that was in Cinderella. But, you know, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, there were a lot of incantations. Angela Lansbury, there were both Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Sure. It's possible that the syllables Bibbledy Boo were used in sequence.
It's going to be a new improv,
which is weird,
show.
Because it actually saying that just now invoked an apparition of Angela Lansbury, who's sitting right at the table with us.
Hello, everybody. My, oh, my.
Oh, how much murder she wrote.
Mark Twain was my first murder story.
And he wrote about it in his autobiography.
His autobiography, Twain by Helms, where Ed Helms tells a bunch of... I think it'd be fun to do an improv show, because the whole thing behind the UCB is don't think. You're just supposed to be in the moment.
Right.
But I think it'd be a fun improv show called Think, where you improvise a bunch of stuff and then you explain, like I did, why your brain went to that place.
Improv, when you do improv, I spent years at UCB in New York and then later on a bit in LA. And there's, it's a, you know, it part of it is just submitting to the crapshoot. Like sometimes it's going to be awesome and sometimes you're going to mess up.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of having an opportunity to explain later what that tangent was and why it was supposed to be funny.
Because maybe in the explanation process, it would justify what maybe a joke that the audience missed. They didn't understand why you took
and,
that.
And they may not laugh at that point, but they would drive home thinking, I feel like I understood that a little bit better.
Ed has a much more linear chain of thought than I would have expected.
Yeah, then I realized, because that seemed so incoherent when he did it on stage.
That's why he said Cocoa Puffs after...
the Dracula scene.
The Dracula scene because...
Of Count Chocula.
Count Chocula was lived in his neighborhood and was a registered sex offender.
I shouldn't interrupt when you're making when you're creating chain reactions.
I know. And
when you're on a Hardwickian,
just to explain,
yes.
I got fucked by a box of cereal when I was a kid.
Oh god!
So that's why I went to immediately to that.
So
it was consensual, by the way.
So this is an episode of Think. you just turned it into.
This is an episode of Do Think.
Yeah, you just explained your riff on Count Chocula.
Yeah. I just wanted you to know where it came from so that you didn't.
Right. Got it.
It was totally completely out of left field.
Yeah. That does sound horrendous.
So when you're driving home, you'll have a much better understanding. I really get it now. I really understand.
Yeah.
When is vacation open?
Relative to this podcast airing.
Well, let's just throw out a date. What?
Wednesday.
Wednesday, the 29th of July. That's 2 days.
This goes out next week, so
it's going to be out.
It's already out.
Vacation has broken every box office record in the history of film.
Yes.
Yep.
It is now the number one movie.
Suck at Jurassic World.
And in Antarctica, yes.
Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think they could have branded. I see. Now.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man, Ed.
What did we do wrong?
We didn't do anything wrong. I think, what if we started co-branding sequels? So what if the what if it was like Jurassic World 2, Griswold's a poppin' or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's Griswold soars. Or there's some type of a... The Griswold sequel is also the Jurassic World sequel. The Griswolds go to Jurassic World.
I think that would be... I mean, there's already enough sort of fan agitation at Hollywood for kind of recycling ideas and characters.
Yeah.
That might be like... the sign of the Hollywood apocalypse.
And you have a dinosaur, Chevy Chase. Come on, guys. Why are we?
Uncool. I should walk out on you right now.
Please don't leave me.
I don't like that joke. Please don't leave me. let's say move back into think, and I want you to explain that. No, I want to move on. The Griswold family.
He's just the oldest person on the set, whereas in the Jurassic World, the dinosaurs were the oldest things on the set when they shot with real dinosaurs.
Right, because they're thousands of years old.
Don't you think the Griswolds go to Jurassic World and then like the trees start to rattle in the water, drop the water, and then and then it's just Chevy emerges, and everyone's freaked out. He's like, "I was just peeing." I mean, like that could happen.
That would actually be delightful.
It wasn't as nefarious a comment as you had taken.
You're right.
When you crossed your arms so defensively,
my body language changed dramatically in defense of my film hero Chevy Chase.
Yes,
I do think. That maybe it's not like the Griswold's vacation to Jurassic World, because that would be too much of a mashup. But you do see like there's like a scene where Rusty and his kids are involved somewhere. Or wouldn't it just be fun to see like characters from other movies pop up
just in the background
in other movies? Yeah. So you're like, yeah, you're watching the next. Name a movie.
Any movie?
The next Top Gun sequel.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you see Bill Murray from Groundhog Day.
That would be fucking... And he just has to watch Goose die over and over again, and he can't save him.
I don't know.
And that's when he has that moment where he realizes that he understands humanity.
I'm just saying, let's buy into this idea that every movie is part of the same universe.
Or
and all of the characters exist in the same universe.
Or in Spider-Man, when Aunt May dies and they strap her to the roof of the car, and they have to drive her.
Do you remember Luna Lounge in New York?
Of course.
So the old eating it shows. I can't remember. I think it was Andy Blitz who had this great bit. Who you remember Andy Blitz?
Andy Blitz has some of my favorite bits.
Great, great comedian. Wrote for Conan forever and ever. He had this bit of where he said something like, "I hate movies because, like, I'm watching a Jack Nicholson movie and everyone in the movie is pretending like they don't recognize Jack Nicholson. And if they were to recognize him, then why wouldn't every bit of dialogue in the movie be, has anyone ever told you you look exactly like Jack Nicholson?" Andy Blitz, ladies and gentlemen. And apologies, Andy, for butchering your brilliant bit. But that's always made me laugh when I think about that.
He has two bits that I fucking love, which one of them is about going on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I'm not going to do the bit because I don't remember all the steps, and the way that he does it is perfect, but it's about how all that matters is that you get the right answer, but it doesn't matter if everything that you say getting to the right answer is complete nonsense. And so he sort of walks through, you know, it's stuff like, "Oh, and then Lincoln was our first alien president." I mean, it's like stuff like that. But then he gets the right answer. He's like, "Yes, I'm the smartest person in the world." I hope it's somewhere on YouTube
to look that up.
The other bit of his that I love is has something to do with like calling his parents or calling his wife's parents and being like, "We've got some good news. We're gonna have a baby. Yeah, it'll be here in about 9 months from now."
Oh my god!
It's something. Again, I'm not doing it justice. I'm not doing it justice.
I think you did a pretty good job.
Andy seems to find these. He just seems to find like it's like looking at the other side of a bookcase.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense. Where he manages to take things that on the surface seem like one thing, and then he just comes from a weird angle and you see it in a whole different, incredibly creative way. He's so fucking funny.
Yep. He's a smart dude.
Have you ever thought about...
His brother Jeff Blitz directed a bunch of Office episodes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, yeah. Blitz sounds like a stage name.
Blitz. Blitz Hardwick.
Blitz Hardwick. Blitz and Buzz.
Buzz and Blitz.
Across the galaxy.
Buzz and Blitz. Buzz.
See,
Buzz.
I said Buzz because of Buzz Lightyear.
Oh.
And so that's why I thought...
Oh, across space. The... Right. Yeah.
And then Blitz.
To infinity of... and... To the
to
the starting no
to
blitz. It's a football term.
Football term.
So
so they're going
buzz
really
and
fast.
Blitz, buzz and surfing blitz. Around the stadium.
Space football.
Space football.
Space. Martian.
The crowd's doing the wave.
Pluto ball.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna play.
Okay, now let's explain it. Let's explain how we got there.
Pluto is a planet and also a dog.
Blitz. Yes, football term.
Who seems to... Pluto the dog has a severe learning disorder.
Moving on. I'm going to move on from... Because I'm already lost.
Pluto the dog has a severe learning disorder because of asbestos in Mickey's tugboat.
There you go.
And...
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. That's the sound when they fall down a big hole. when they don't just scream. It's like a woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
I mean, you couldn't. Why would you save that person? Because you'd be too hard laughing. You'd be laughing too hard at the hilarity of their death.
Yeah.
Yelp.
Why when a cartoon character runs in place, you know, before they actually. Yeah, it's that the cans rattling sound.
Yeah.
You know, or like a it's like a. Jingling,
because they're just getting ready to tear it up.
But why is that the sound?
Isn't that the sound it makes when you get ready to? I mean, I know when I don't just start running, my feet just spin in place for a couple of seconds, and then I take off.
And you're in sort of a forward leaning posture.
Well, I think it's because all those people had bare feet, the Flintstones, Snagglepuss. None of them were wearing shoes.
Road dog.
And so I think that's the sound of bare feet on a prehistoric. Tapestry.
You're right, which is something we can only guess.
By tapestry, I mean landscape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
This is another episode of Do Think.
Could a devout Christian be a fan of the Flintstones, or does that contradict? Oh, no. I guess that actually the Flintstones.
That's probably the biggest show at the Creation Museum.
No, but I said that wrong. Yeah. It's a creationist's wet dream. It validates that theology.
That it all came.
Yeah, that men and dinosaurs existed simultaneously.
I've said this on the podcast before. My theory is that the Flintstones happened either after or simultaneously during the Jetsons. Because the Jetsons are in the clouds. I feel like there was some type of planetary catastrophe, some type of Armageddon.
Well, they were certainly written at the same time.
Yes.
There's a lot of overlapping storylines.
Yeah.
All
I'm saying is the next vacation movie needs the Great Gazoo in it. Just put the Great Gazoo. Harvey Korman's not alive anymore, is he? Harvey Korman's still alive? If Harvey Korman's still alive, you could get a Great Gazoo cameo.
All right.
In your next vacation movie at Jurassic World.
I think it would be cool if, Yes, that's the Jurassic World Griswold thing where it's no longer dinosaurs are no longer like entertainment at a park. They've become integrated into society as like a crane.
Yep.
You know, like the Brontosaurus is a crane.
That's right.
And we're just sort of using dinosaurs.
It's basically Jurassic World, except Indominus Rex goes, "You think you got problems?" Like instead, yeah. And then he gets eaten by the
bird. Right.
By the big prehistoric,
I liked that movie.
Yeah, it was really fun.
It was just full on. I ate like two tubs of popcorn. I'm so psyched, just edge of my seat. Chris Pratt, super funny.
It's funny how there's like, well, now there's going to be a Jurassic World 2, and you're like, but isn't that Jurassic Park like 5? I mean, like,
oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so it's funny to see like sequel branches branching their own. Like they're now the parent of another.
Well, you see, it's a fractal.
It is. So it is a bit of a fractal.
The way that it works,
it is
every sort of.
I can't
wait
to see the new Jurassic World fractal.
Oh,
I think
God.
Kids are going to start gonna saying
be,
that.
That's it's no longer sequels. It's just fractals. That's kind of what the new vacation is. It's like, it's Well, I guess it's a straight sequel, but technically.
Technically. Now, was there, did you know, I don't know if you were in on any of these meetings, but the choice to just call it Vacation? Do you think that'll trick people into thinking, well, it's a reboot? Like, but it's not a reboot. It's just an extension of the story of the universe.
First of all, I'm in every meeting.
Okay, good.
There are no meetings.
I thought they were asking you to leave because you were listening to yourself on the Waze app.
I have no idea why that happened. So what was the question?
It was the decision to call it. I think it's good that they didn't, to be honest, because I think when
didn't what?
They didn't call it like, you know, Vacation 5, Rusty's outing or whatever.
Right.
You know, because it
re-vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Another vacation, you know, more vacation time. Because I think that almost kind of makes it sound cheaper in a way when people go, okay, they gave it a silly name. I think just calling it Vacation and it's our generation's vacation.
Right.
And you as Rusty are our Gen X generation and you have kids. I think it was a nice choice.
It's kind of like there's been a lot of discussion. Is it a reboot? Is it a remake? Is it a sequel? Is it like what do you call it? And it's kind of all of those things.
It's technically the fifth, right? It's technically number 5.
That is correct.
Right.
Yeah. But it's maybe a restart?
A restart. Vacation 5, Swamp.
It's the next generation.
Yep.
What other, besides Star Trek, what other next generations have we seen?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the Bond films do it all the time,
those don't take place in real time, though.
No.
Like, they don't acknowledge previous Bonds.
I think Daniel Craig at one point in the new movie is like, wasn't Sean Connery great?
And no, you know what? You're right, because 007 is just the designation, and different people are 007.
Yeah, but they're not really clear on
why they're called James Bond.
Exactly.
Why they
but
all have
that
the same
that could
name.
Also be part of the designation. I think the cooler interpretation is that is a designation.
Yes.
But I think the one that they sort of want people to have is like, it's the same guy.
Right. Right. Right.
It's the same guy, and the older he gets, the better technology gets, and the younger he's a Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
It's actually a Benjamin Button story. It's the Benjamin Button fractal.
Yep. There you go. It's a perfect mashup
of those two things.
Bond, James Button.
James Button, Benjamin Button.
And it's and I guess, but Roger Moore was older than Sean Connery.
Yes.
So that kind of interrupted the Benjamin Button effect. But
well, he took a pit stop just to get older for a minute,
yep.
And was like, I don't like this too much.
Right,
and
right.
Then he went back.
He went off his meds.
To Timothy
and he
Dalton.
Started aging. He's taking Benjamin Button meds.
He's yeah,
which are expensive.
Very expensive.
But real.
Yeah. Well, you know, the important thing is that they're very real.
You can get them.
They're very real.
You can get them.
Not enough to bring Goose back, though.
Yeah, no, that you'd have to go to Pet Cemetery for, which would be a...
They buried Goose in Pet Cemetery just because his name was
Goose. Yeah.
Just because they knew, like, well, the headstone's going to say Goose. I mean, it's going to confuse people.
How do we do that? And Meg Ryan was like, you know what? I really want him in a Pet Cemetery.
Wait, why would Meg Ryan, the actress, care about where Goose was, the character, was buried?
Because she was in those meetings. She was in all the development meetings for Top Gun.
And it would be crazy to put him in a human cemetery and have it say Goose. We were like, why would someone bury a goose here who hit a windshield?
Right.
Which it would say.
And then other people who with loved ones in that cemetery would be like, what is this, a Pet Cemetery?
Yeah, I mean.
I don't want.
Are these going to come back possessed?
Yeah, I don't. Right.
So somewhere,
what are you going to do?
So somewhere, a possessed version of Anthony Edwards as Goose is walking around Bangor, Maine.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
they just buried him.
is that where it takes place?
Yeah, not all of his stories take place in Bangor, Maine. Don't they?
Right, right.
Yeah, the greater Maine area.
Either that,
Maine
or yeah. Or
shut up, Kyle. Fuck off, Kyle. Eat a dick, Kyle.
I'm trying to figure out if it's either that's what happened or Meg Ryan got hold of the monkey's paw,
right?
And wished he came back, right? Isn't that what story is that?
The
monkey's paw.
It was monkey. I just think of it as the Simpsons Halloween special, where they get the monkey's paw.
It's basically Pet Sematary, but it doesn't play out.
Right.
It's like the son comes back. The son's killed in the factory, horrific accident. The parents wish on the monkey's paw that he comes back to life, and he does.
And just he'd be super fucked up.
He was mangled in this factory accident, and he's pounding on the door.
Yeah.
And then the story ends.
Yes.
And it's like, oh my God, do we want to see him? I don't know. What
but
do
it
we
continues
do?
Because it's Goose.
It's Goose. If they had opened the door,
yeah,
he'd be. I mean, how crazy would it be if he was like...
His head would just be hanging off to the side.
But he'd be like delighted to be home.
Yeah, he'd be thrilled. Everything just looks sideways to him and he's in a flight suit that he can't take off. But,
right.
But, you know, you kind of get, you know, it's sort of fun.
Yeah.
The kids could turn his head into a maypole and just, you know, swirl it around. And,
sure.
Have a good time.
Right.
So
right.
We have a lot of ideas that we came up with today that
a
I think...
A lot of pitches.
Really...
A lot of pitches.
Yeah, we got to get to work on these.
Right.
Yeah.
The Mark Twain biopic... That is also Pet Sematary.
Okay, we could do that too.
I don't think that's fun.
No.
Val Kilmer would not agree to do that one.
Yes, he would. Are you kidding me? Val Kilmer's so weird. He'd play the baby. Like, he wouldn't fucking care.
Did you ever see his Mark Twain show?
No, I heard it was amazing.
I did too. I wish I'd seen it. I'm a big Mark Twain fan and Val Kilmer fan and Iceman fan.
It all comes back around.
God damn it. This is the show of fractal connectivity.
That joke, that reference was a dead son beating the door until we opened it. And it came back.
But it's not the same.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this has been an amazing fractal experience with you.
I feel great about it.
I thank you for coming. Vacation is already in theaters, and I'm sure you've already seen it a couple times, but you should go see it again anyway.
Okay.
And I also feel... I feel good when a movie, because, you know, obviously we're in a time of reboots and reimaginings, and that has had a negative connotation. But every time someone does it right, then people go, oh, because someone just asked me, like, what do you think about new Ghostbusters? And I'm like, you know what? If we get more Ghostbusters movies and they're great, then fucking bring them on. Like,
yeah.
They don't. No one's going to – the government doesn't step in and go, well, before we show this movie, we're going to need all the original copies of Ghostbusters and Vacation, and we're going to throw them in this furnace, and you can never watch them.
Right.
Again.
Like, well, it's movies live or die on their own merits.
Yes.
You know, and if – I'm insanely proud of this Vacation, and no one is more precious about the Griswold universe than yours truly. Like, I was – very trepidatious when I got the script, and then I read it and I was like, this is awesome. This is such a tribute to the original world and to the original characters. And then having Chevy and Beverly D'Angelo be in the movie was the ultimate affirmation for all of us. And it feels good. I'm enormously proud of it. And I hope fans agree.
Was there a Jane Krakowski cameo?
No.
She was in the original.
She was, yeah.
Not a lot of people.
Dad says I'm the best kisser.
Dad says I'm the best kisser. That was Jane Krakowski.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You guys... Kyle's nodding.
Cousin Eddie's daughter.
Cousin Eddie's daughter was Jane Krakowski.
On the seesaw. Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know.
The Cousin Eddie's incestuous lover.
The new spinoff movie.
Yes.
Speaking of Ancestry.com, sometimes it does get a little muddled sometimes where you'll start seeing names recur in family trees, but it was like, oh, this person married a Smith, but if you go far back enough, another person and you're married a Smith. You know, there's a...
Well, back then, everybody married their sisters and brothers, right?
Yeah, it was just convenient.
There just wasn't, it was 60 miles to the next farm.
Why go, why go to the market when you can just go to the backyard?
Right, right.
Where you keep your kids.
That's how I...
I mean, the ones that you
approach.
Thought to cover in the winter.
Right.
Good. Well, we solved that.
All done.
Mr. Helms, I adore you, and I always love hanging out with you.
Such a pleasure,
and
Chris.
I hope that we get to do some more silly... bluegrass covers.
Amen.
At some point.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ed. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Turn right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.